Hello and welcome to the BRC Trade Podcast. I'm William Madison. A host of questions to cover today. Is it now winter for the UK-EU negotiations, or is a deal still possible this autumn? When is a negotiating tunnel, a submarine, or neither? Where does the continuing standoff and legal measures taken by the European Commission against the UK leave the protocol and key decisions on Northern Ireland? And what will the Airbus WTO decision, widely expected this week, mean for tariffs on imported goods to the UK and the EU? All huge topics, and we're joined as ever by the ever-shrinking Aidan Connolly, director of the NIRC. Aidan, how are you going? How are the marathons?
One done. I have another one to go on Halloween. So I'm enjoying a week break before I start back in. So first run in a week today.
Lovely, lovely. For listeners, Aidan's been done his first of two charities for, is it the charity Aware?
It is Aware, and Aware is a charity that provides support on mental challenges, depression, that sort of thing. I am doing two half marathons. Bearing in mind, this time last year I was 21 and a half stone and couldn't walk 50 metres, never mind run half marathons. So if you want to donate at all, you can go to my Just Giving page, just put in Just Giving and search for Aidan Connolly. Thank you.
And we're also joined by William Bain, the BRC's trade expert, never knowingly called a shrinking violet. William, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm just in awe of what Aidan's doing. It's fabulous. It's an example to us all.
It is pretty incredible. So, well, William,
I tell you what the secret is? The secret is to get your brother to run in front of you with a kebab.
It does seem like a pretty good way of doing it. So, William, starting off with you, because we've got a lot to talk about today. The Prime Minister received a video call from the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Saturday afternoon. Was this a friendly chat, or did she have a punchy message after last week's negotiations?
Well, I think it was polite, but very businesslike, because we're really at crunch time now. I don't think many people felt that there was going to be a huge amount of progress in the negotiations last week, although it seems on some issues on a technical level, things are progressing along. So things like roads, haulage, market access for goods and services, it does look as if there is a sort of coming together, if not as yet having a consolidated text, but certainly a coming together, a convergence of positions. But the problem, of course, is on the top of the house issues. And these are well rehearsed, but worth going over again. So top of the pile is state aid. Now, what happened last week in the negotiations were that Lord Frost tabled around five or so non-papers, which are actually policy papers. And these took forward things a little bit. So they indicated that, for example, in state aid, there might be common principles that both the UK and EU would share for both of their state aid policies. but what this didn't do was, I think, hit the mark as far as the European Commission's concerned. And I think fundamentally it's this. I mean, for the UK to say, just trust us, you know, we're not planning right now to want to state aid a lot of older industries. Bear in mind, this is an agreement that's going to have to last for four or five decades or even longer. And so it's got to be all weather and weatherproof in terms of what changes in attitude in state aid might come in the UK, whether, you know, people will want even more state aid or go back to a kind of Thatcherite position and not want any state aid, and also in the European Union as well. So this is an agreement that's going to stand the test of time. And I think what's happening in Brussels is people saying, well, look, we need to have something more substantive here to give some guarantees. We need to have proper enforcement. And so I think the pressure is going to be put on London to come up with a plan that involves an ex-ante independent regulator to look at decisions on state aid, which are made by ministers. You know, something that's kind of equivalent to the role that the Commission has in terms of state aid in the European Union. Now, that's not meaning that the UK has to follow EU state aid rules. It does not mean that the UK has to follow the European Court of Justice on state aid, a heavily litigated area in Luxembourg. But what it does mean is that alongside common principles, there has to be a rigorous enforcement mechanism in the UK as well. And so I think that is really the crux of whether there's going to be an agreement or not, is really around that issue. On fisheries, it does look like there is a sort of 3-year transition plan that's been put in place. That the fisheries, of course, is the area where Michel Barnier is going to have issues with the member states, not least France, because they are not going to get the same fishing rights that have existed since 1973. So that's where the EU and particularly the member states have got to have some give. And then the other issue for the UK is around the governance of the agreement. Now, what the EU does not want is a kind of similar approach to that which it's had with Switzerland, whereby there were over 100 separate bilateral agreements and no overall enforcement mechanism within these. And the EU thinks this is very important, not least after what we've seen with the UK Internal Market Bill and some loss of trust in the UK in Brussels and elsewhere as a result. So this becomes quite an important area. And basically it would work like this really. You know, would it be possible if there is a breach of the agreement discovered and found through the dispute resolution processes in one part of the agreement, capable of being subject to sanctions in other parts of cooperation? So, for example, if there were a breach of state aid rules, the common principles agreed between both sides, would it be possible for the EU to impose tariffs on the UK and vice versa, of course? And that is the kind of system that the EU wants, an integrated governance system where breach of one part can result in sanctions or suspension terms in another part. And the question really is whether the UK is prepared to sign up to that type of approach. It's agreed to kind of come into the middle. Originally, it wanted about sort of 7 or 8 different enforcement mechanisms. But as time is dragging on, and if no particular proposals have been tabled by London, the pressure will be on to sign up to that single governance regime for the entire agreement. So that's another really important part for Brussels, and it has increasingly become important given the shenanigans that we've seen with the UK Internal Market Bill. So really, I think where we are now, William, is that it is very likely that this process will go on until the first half of November. That's way beyond the deadline that the UK Prime Minister set, which of course was around the 15th of October, and the EU's preferred deadline, which was the end of October. And that is, I think, because neither side wants to stop talking. Neither side is going to collapse the talks. There is some progress being made. The question is it happening quickly enough? So after Saturday's call, the Prime Minister and the Commission President have agreed to have their negotiators intensify the process. So there's going to be 11 days of restricted negotiations, so much smaller teams getting together, trying to thrash out these critical issues. Data as well has emerged as an issue quite late on in the day, which now needs to be resolved. Although it looks like on human rights, signals perhaps that the UK is coming more into the EU's way of thinking on that, which may help get police and judicial cooperation over the line. But really, we need a sort of intensive period before the European Council to determine whether we go into a tunnel or a submarine, as Michel Barnier has said to call it, or whether that will have to happen after the European Council. And as we've said, you know, this is not like the withdrawal agreement. It has not been assembled all piece by piece. It has to be assembled from scratch, a 700-page international treaty with many more complex parts than the withdrawal agreement. So really the question is, you know, do we simply get timed out like in a nice hockey game? If the score is 0-0 and there's just not time for either side to kind of score a goal, in that game. And that is still the danger. That is still the danger about the process that we're now in. But we're certainly nowhere near going into the sort of the final stage of the negotiations. And there's a lot which has got to be done, and as a result, much more uncertainty for business.
So the BRC has been communicating its key outcomes on zero tariff deals, on a zero tariff deal, I should say, to politicians and the media over the past few weeks. What does the UK need to do to get into this famous negotiating tunnel and seal the deal? So what's the difference between a tunnel and what you alluded to before, what Michel Barnier calls a submarine? We're really not in either at the moment, are we?
No, we aren't. And it's unlikely, unless there's dramatic progress this week, that we're going to be in that tunnel before the European Council summit on the 15th and 16th of October. The importance of that could be the event politically whereby the EU heads of government authorise Michel Barnier to proceed to conclude the agreement, effectively to enter the negotiating tunnel. That's a sort of intense period where, you know, outside advice, shall we say, from the media and from others is shut out altogether. The focus is on completing the legal text, working through the text on those final issues to be resolved, and sort of coming out of the tunnel when you have a final agreement. And I think that's where we need to be for a trade agreement of this scale and complexity. As a sort of submarine has been the analogy used by Michel Barnier, that you know, frankly, you submerge below the sea and you conduct the necessary business of finishing this agreement and completing it, and only sort of coming up back above the sea when the agreement has been concluded. So those are the two sort of analogies about what this process is. But the way that the EU wants to do this is that it has conducted this process through parallelism. So it wanted all of the key political issues to be resolved before entering this final negotiating tunnel to produce the final concluded legal text. And that is what Downing Street and Number 10 are really keen to do. They would want in the tunnel tomorrow if they could get there. But the EU is looking for more. It wants political agreement on state aid, fisheries and governance, and on data before we can enter this final phase, which could last around 3 weeks given the scale of the treaty. So, as I say, time is running very short. We start to, even by mid-November, run up against the bumper of the legal times involved to ratify any agreement on both sides, both at Westminster and in the EU institutions. But the goal, I think, of both sides now is to get a deal. But the question is whether both sides are willing to support the means of getting the deal, the terms that are attached to that zero tariff deal.
So given the heightened uncertainty that you're talking about, what should retailers be doing to limit risk of exposure to the prospects of a no trade deal that could come into effect on the 1st of January?
Well, the key things are to reduce potential exposure to tariffs. I know that many companies have been doing this already, factoring it into their financial cases and potential budgetary elements for the year ahead. Some are speaking to suppliers. So if your goods come delivery duty paid and you're not responsible yourself for meeting tariff costs, it's the suppliers who do that. You need to be speaking to the suppliers to make sure they know this and that they're budgeting for that cost in terms of their supply contracts. The main practical thing that companies can do is to ensure that they have duty deferment accounts with HMRC, because that is the necessary tool to ensure that if there is a no deal, that at least you can get 6 months to pay for any customs duties that become liable after January. So if you have a duty deferment account, You can defer the payment of any customs duties until July. So that is something that helps businesses adjust to not face that tariff shock straight away in January. There are, of course, things that businesses have known for some time are coming. For example, import VAT on consignments coming from the EU into Great Britain and also going the other way. So companies have to look in terms of budgeting for those, exporting companies into how they will account for that with their customers in the EU. Customs declarations are coming. So people should be speaking to their freight forwarders and their customs agents to make sure that the processes are beginning to roll out in terms of how they would make those customs declarations from next year. So these are the kind of necessary preparations that firms should be looking to ramp up whatever happens over the next 5 weeks.
So, Aidan, turning to you now, the UK Internal Market Bill is expected to take a sort of a meandering route through the House of Lords over the next couple of months. How is it impacting on negotiations and the important work of the Joint and Specialised Committees on Critical Supply Chains affecting Northern Ireland?
So one of the big things that we've been looking for, and it's been an ask of ours, has been this certified and auditable supply chain. Some people are calling it the supermarket solution. We've heard it called RAMS, which is the Retail Assured Movement System. There's a lot of names floating up out there, but we will continue to use a certified and auditable supply chain. Now, to get that certified and auditable supply chain, there has to be a certain amount of trust. And the trust is on the part of the EU. So we have always said that it's up to the UK to bring forward technical solutions, and it's up to the EU to give that generosity of spirit and to show and to have trust in it so that the mitigations can be put into practice. At the moment, we don't have that amount of trust, quite simply because the UK Internal Market Bill, as the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Brandon Lewis, said, it breaks the law in a limited and specific way. It doesn't matter whether it's limited or specific at all. It undermines confidence. It undermines trust. And quite frankly, while you know people can see that there is a laudable principle behind it, and that is to make sure that there isn't discrimination and that there is a level playing field across the UK. The way that it is being done has undermined trust in the process. Now, it isn't saying that we're laying all the blame on the side of the UK government. There are negotiations that are going on. You know, the unfortunately, the withdrawal agreement, the Northern Ireland Protocol, and those deliberations of the Joint Committee have been caught up in the FTA negotiations, that free trade agreement negotiations. So, you know, they are separate but equal and parallel, but they are having an influence on each other, which doesn't do too well for GB firms working in Northern Ireland or Northern Ireland business itself. Now, from the EU, what we have said to both the UK and to the EU is that we as business people, we as business representatives, and we as the retail industry have put our faith in the process. And that process is feeding into the specialised committee, which then feeds into the joint committee, and that we get some sensible decisions from that joint committee. Now, we have asked them to put out something, even small, throw a dog a bone, as you will, to show that it is worth having faith in this process, that the process is working, that those very deep technical discussions, which we assume and we know are going on, that there is some fruitful results coming out of it. But as of yet, we haven't had anything. And I think that makes it hard, especially when this is playing out to become a very political-driven set of circumstances rather than the process-driven set of circumstances, which it should be. So we will continue to ask the EU and the UK to give us that, you know, we're doing this on faith at the minute. What we need is some tangible results to show that the process is working. What they have said is they don't want to do it drip-feeding. They'd rather do it as one complete package. So we're expecting that maybe the second week of November, first or second week in November. For us, that is really, really not good enough as far as time's concerned. It gives us 6 weeks, unless they come out and say, yes, there's a supermarket solution, there's a retail solution, very little is at risk, we're forgetting about EHCs. Unless they come out with something like that, which is not going to happen, then we are still stuck with about 6 weeks to implement huge changes in how we trade GB to ANI, and everything from customs to SPS, that's those sanitary and phytosanitary checks on products of animal origin and some plant products as well. And really, you know, we've got to the stage now where the industry, and it's not just our industry, but particularly in our industry, because of we are caught in the middle. We are business to business, and we are also business to consumer. And that means that we are seeing all ends of the spectrum and all ends of the frustration here. And I think that is now more tangible than it has ever been. For me, we have a very, very short window here as far as being able to get those common sense practical decisions. And all we can ask for is that they come quicker.
Yeah, absolutely. So the specialized committee meets this week. What progress do we need soon to make sure that the protocol works with less than 3 months now to go?
Well, going back to what I said there, that supermarket solution or the RAM solution, or as we call it, that certified notable supply chain, that needs to come very, very quickly to allow us to know what we need to put in place. Even with a certified notable supply chain, there will be a burden of proof. There will be certain hoops that we have to jump through, and it is going to take time for even the largest retailers to get things ready for that. What we need is the definition of what is at risk, and you know the EU can make that very subjective. So anything, you know, if their subjective priority is to protect the single market and the customs union, then it will be a very narrow view of what is not at risk. What we need them to have is an objective view, and that's based on what has gone on before, who we sell to, and the likelihood of things going over the border being very, very small. But again, that is up to the joint committee. But the problem with this, and it's something that William and I, you know, tear our hair out of, is that we have said from the start that this is a jigsaw. And this is not sort of linear. If you put one in place, then everything becomes all right. You have to look at SPS, you have to look at VAT, you have to look at customs, you have to look at the paperwork, you have to look at the man hours, you have to look at all of these things before you get the full picture. Again, that's a lot of stuff to do in a couple of years, never mind in 2 or 3 months. So all we can do is continue to ask for that clarity and continue to make representations both to the EU, the UK government, the Irish government, the European Parliament, whoever we can, to make sure that they understand that unless we get sincere and wide-ranging derogations and mitigations, then you know the cost of groceries in Northern Ireland, the cost of retail goods in Northern Ireland will go up, and we will no longer be able to give Northern Ireland households the same choice and affordability that they enjoy today.
Mm. So, William, on wider trade matters, we're expecting the WTO's panel decision on Airbus subsidies this week. What is the EU likely to do, and when and how will that impact on UK tariffs on goods imported from the US?
Well, this dispute's really sort of dragged on for around 16 years over the subsidies given to Airbus in the EU and Boeing in the US in terms of the aerospace industry and constructing these aircraft for the future. As you might be aware, the WTO panel earlier this year allowed the US to impose new tariffs on EU goods because it found that the subsidies for Airbus had been outside the terms of the WTO agreement. And now we have the other part, which is that we're awaiting this judgment this week in terms of the US government subsidies for Boeing. Now, it's widely anticipated that these will be found to be unacceptable as well. And therefore, it appears that the EU will be able to have the authority to levy between $3 and $4 billion worth of new tariffs on US imports. I mean, look, neither side is happy with the inability to resolve this dispute, but there are quite swinging tariffs on things like Scotch whisky, other agri-food products from the UK and from the EU. And of course, until the 1st of January, this issue is still one in which the EU makes decisions in respect of the UK. So the big question for the EU is on timing. You know, does it seek to impose tariffs on, US clothing or, Harley Davidsons or more agri-food products before the US election at the start of November? Or does it hold off and wait until we see what the outcome of that election is? If it does decide to act either this week or next week, then that could escalate matters in the run-up to the US election. So that is an important issue. And I know there are many businesses in the UK and in the EU who are hoping that the Commission might stay its hand until after the result of the US election is known. The reason for that is that there is the prospect of slightly better trade relationships with the United States under a different administration from the present one. If the incumbent is returned, then it's going to be a very interesting 4 years in terms of trade policy and indeed the future of the WTO itself. So there's a lot to play for. The issue about the timing is, I think, going to be the critical one that the Commission has to look at. And as we've said, until the 1st of January, the UK is included in the Commission's decisions. And so there is a lot of conversations going on in London between businesses and DIT, and conversations between DIT and the European Commission about what to do. But it's going to be a major event, and watch for that later this week.
Indeed. So big decisions with the US election now less than a month away. So I guess that's where we'll leave the discussions for today. Many thanks to you, Aidan, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to you too, William.
Pleasure as usual.
If you'd like to find out more, you can go to brc.org.uk/Brexit for any of the other trade news. Apart from that, it's goodbye for now.